Which had the brother?
These are the sons?
Yeah, it's them. We can hand them out on one condition.
They come back.
Back to them, back to Niranjan Swami's head. Hands.
Upchat. She said the Swamastika. I'm going to just chant. We'll read it later.
Thank you.
I'll say a little something. And then maybe we'll see whether Maharaj is going to say a little something. This is a song about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan who are pictured on the front of the songbook. They are Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami. And in this song, it is describing many of the wonderful characteristics of these exalted Vaishnavas, who are all contemporaries of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and who were personally empowered to carry out Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's will by participating and contributing to the distribution of ecstatic love for the Supreme Lord, which is the purpose for which Lord Chaitanya appeared in this world. The Goswamis are eternal associates of the Lord who participate in his divine Leela, both as eternal associates in Krishna Loka, as well as eternal associates in Lord Chaitanya's place of residence in the spiritual world. These pastimes are going on simultaneously. So therefore they have the Nitya Siddha form as an associate of the Lord, of Lord Krishna, and they also have a form as a sadaka. That sadaka form is that form which we are worshipping or glorifying in this particular song. Because as sadakas, from the characteristic traits that they manifested as described here, is that they are always absorbed in chanting the holy names of the Lord. Of course, Nitya Siddha devotees in Krishna Loka are also absorbed in chanting Krishna's names and pastimes as well. But they also performed in their sadhaka forms very severe austerities. And they also preached in such a way to leave behind a wealth of wisdom. Many of them had written books. Srila Jiva Goswami was probably one of the most prolific philosophers in the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. Srila Rupa Goswami had written so many books describing the giving the descriptions of the Lord's relationships with his eternal associates in Krishna Loka. He is the author of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, The Nectar of Devotion. He is the author of Lalita Madhava, The Dagda Madhava. He is the author of so many books, and it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Srila Rupa Goswami was empowered by the Lord, who entered within Rupa Goswami's heart and revealed all the depth of Vedic wisdom within his heart. Just as Lord Brahma had all the depth of Vedic wisdom revealed in his heart, Teni Brahma Yadiya Kaviye Muyanti Yat Surya, as is described in Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Brahma had Vedic wisdom revealed within his heart by the Supreme Lord. In the same way, Rupa Goswami had everything revealed within his heart. And therefore, everything that he did and said was all completely in accordance with the conclusions of the entire disciplic succession. He was perfectly empowered soul. This is described by Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. Srila Sanatana Goswami was also a prolific writer. So these, he wrote Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he wrote the Aribhakti Vilas. So here it's described that they were very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. And thus they are honored all over the three worlds and are worth taking shelter of, because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. I'm not going to read all the translations to these verses. Instead, I'm going to speak a commentary Srila Prabhupada gave to the first verse of this. It is a very interesting commentary, very relevant commentary sometimes when we hear about the activities of Goswamis, we think that their activities are not so relevant because they were such renunciants. And I'm not such a renunciant, so what does it have to do with me? What? And we hear about Raghunath Das Goswami's renunciation, his austerities appeared to be like lines in a stone. You know, his regulation and his austerities were like the lines in a stone, they're immovable. Raghunath Das Goswami, every day he would eat just like a pad of butter, and he would sleep, and he would spend 1.5 hours actually for the whole day taking care of his body, you know, which includes sleeping, eating, and everything else that has to be done in relationship to the body. And 2.5 hours of every day was spent absorbed executing the instructions of Lord Chaitanya, which was to not hear nonsense talk or to engage in any kind of nonsense talk, to not be eager to eat opulent food, to wear very nice clothing. His Lord Chaitanya instructed him to always absorb himself in the chanting of Hare Krishna and to worship Radha and Krishna always within his heart. So Raghunath Das Goswami, for 22.5 hours every day, he was absorbed in these things, and at most, I think it was what, three dandas. It comes to about an hour and a half, huh? Yeah, 24 minutes, something like that. Yeah, so it's about an hour and a half, right? Three dandas. I said three. I was thinking somehow Russian was coming in my mind. Three dandas. And then it's described that, but most of the time he would forget to engage in these activities of the three dandas. He would forget to eat. He would forget to sleep. He'd stay up all night long. So, how do we relate to that? What does it mean, you know? Raghunath Das Goswami, also it's described, actually his disappearance day is coming up soon, isn't it? Like next week. We'll talk about all his pastimes next week. But it's described how he would eat, he would take as his meal the rejected rice, you know, that Jagannath Prasad, that even the cows had gone through and selected the prasadam. The cows would go through and eat whatever they could possibly eat, and anything they wouldn't eat, he would reject it and leave it aside. The Raghunath Das, he would go and take those pieces of rejected rice, and he would clean them, each one, and take out the core, and then he would wash it, and then he would, that was his prasad. Again, and every time he would eat that, he would quote a verse from Bhagavatam condemning himself for being a sense enjoyer. He was thinking like that. So, again, how do we, does that mean we should, no, we can't imitate. Obviously, we don't imitate. Imitate is a cause of fall down if we try to imitate the renunciation. So why are we so much eager to hear about these personalities? Do their activities have to do in relationship to us as residents of Kali Yuga, who are not so much attracted to austerities and have no taste for the holy name? To chant 16 rounds is like chewing nails, and sometimes, or it's very difficult. And we have so many other things that we have to do with our lives, and what to speak of. When it comes time to sleep, 1.5 hours for eating and sleeping and taking care of all of, we need so many hours to sleep every day, and to forget sleeping? No, we can't forget sleeping. But they, as described in this song, they are teaching us something that we should aspire for. Aspire. It's because we aspire for something doesn't mean that we either imitate now, Or that we become, or sometimes people will feel like, how can I possibly aspire for that? I mean, I can't even chant 16 rounds straight in the morning without my mind. I'm going to aspire to finish 16 rounds, not chant all day long. But we aspire for their type of dedication and their type of
complete absorption in Krishna, because that's the goal. And because we know such examples exist, and we hear about their activities and pastimes, it gives us something to aspire for. It gives us a sense of hope. And this is what Srila Prabhupada talks about in his commentary in relationship to the six Goswamis. How does it relate to us? And that's what I wanted to read Prabhupada's commentary, because it brings us down to where we are in Krishna consciousness, where we want to go, and why we should not become discouraged, because we're not there and we're still here. And sometimes that's also a source of, I'm not there and I'm still here, and I have a lot of things. I have ambitions and goals I want fulfilled in this life. Just the mere thought of being always just hearing and chanting about Krishna and absorbed in pastime and Radha and Krishna in my heart, so they're just like the Goswamis, the pastimes of Radha and Krishna were manifested in their heart like transcendental television. You were watching it daily, every moment. They were watching these pastimes as they were opening up and revealed in their hearts. And so Prabhupada says here, they were practicing to teach us Apani, Achari, Prabhu, Jivera, Shikaya. Simply teaching will not do unless we practice. That is a very important thing. Practice, practical life. Simply quoting verses like parrot will not be very much beneficial. One must apply. Jnanam, vijnanam, sahitam. Jnana means to know the thing, and vijnan means to apply the things in practical life. Jnanam, vijnanam, sahitam. So we must know the vijnan, how practically. That is taught by the Goswamis. Krishna kirtana gananatana. Always chanting the glories of Krishna. Kirtana gananatana. Nartana means dancing. Bhakti Marg Swami teaches us how to dance. We need examples, right? This is what Prabhupada is talking about. We need examples. We want to know how to dance enthusiastically. Watch Bhakti Marg Swami. Everybody's always anticipating Maharaja's arrival in Mayapur for the kirtans. Because whenever Maharaj is there in kirtan, everybody wants to dance. He doesn't care if he doesn't lead the kirtan, it doesn't make any difference to him. He's blissful, chant and dance. Whoever leads the kirtan. But this is what Prabhupada's talking about. You have to understand, Maharaj. This is what Prabhupada's talking about. Listen, you'll see, you'll understand. Prabhupada says, kirtan, gananata. Natana means dancing. Dancing is very good. The more you dance, the more you become light. Means the burden of material contamination becomes reduced. And for those who want to become light, lose weight, that's also. Prabhupada's not saying that, that's my commentary. The more you dance, the more you become light. What does light mean? Light means.
Free. Burden off.
Yeah.
Free.
Yes, free from distress, anxiety. It's like Maharaj was talking about in the Sunday feast in Hartford. He's telling everybody, he said, everybody's got all these problems and anxieties. Well, just don't think about it. You know, there's something better to think about it. If you think about something better, then you won't think about all these anxieties. You become light. If you become happy, you're not thinking about, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. It's like if somebody's absorbed, if they're really absorbed in chanting Hare Krishna. While they're absorbed in chanting Hare Krishna, they're not thinking about, I got to go soon. That just doesn't happen. You forget. In fact, Narada Muni describes this in the Bhagavatam, that when you get in the association of devotees who are absorbed, he says that it's like, what is it? He describes it's like the waves of a river. Yeah. When the waves of the river are coming very strong, and you get caught in those waves of the river, there's nothing you can do to fight against it. It's like waves of the river. Go out and try to stop the waves of the river. Like Banasura? No, forget it. You can't do. Those waves are very powerful. And so when you get an association of persons who are like absorbed, and you get so absorbed. What does Narayana Muni say? He says you forget about such things like hunger and thirst and illusion, lamentation and fear. They also go away too. They all go away simply by becoming absorbed in hearing. So Prabhupada says, if you dance, dancing is so nice. Even if you dance, he says, even if you don't, dancing is so nice, even if you don't feel ecstasy, if you dance by force, that will also help us. Maharaj doesn't have to dance by force. He's driven by the force of his ecstatic.
He is the dancing force.
He is the dancing force, actually. By his force, everybody else dances. Even a lame person like me sometimes gets off his feet.
I heard of somebody tried to force you that lifted
me. Somebody lifted me and got me. That's why I'm a lame person. Somebody lifted, threw me up in the air in Mayapur and had broke my knee and joints and ligaments and cartilage and everything is gone.
Should have quit after the second one.
Yeah, it was the third one. Yeah, and then 10 years later, I was dancing in Russia and destroyed the other leg.
At least there's symmetry.
Yeah.
last week he was dancing at Kirtan outside in the Boston Commons, right?
Yeah, well, it was. It was a rare event.
Ooh, I was there.
Everybody noticed it was a rare event. So he says, even by force, Prabhupada went in the verse, Atakshi Krishna Namani Nabhavidgani Indriyai. This verse says Krishna cannot be understood by the blunt material senses. He can only be understood when senses have been purified by having been saturated, absorbed, and engaged in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada, and he was quoting this verse in his comment to this verse, he said that even if by force you engage your senses in Krishna's service, he said Krishna will become very pleased. That you but force yourself. I'm going to do this. Because if you're forcing yourself, obviously if you're forcing yourself, if you don't have a spontaneous attraction, but you're forcing yourself, that means you're doing it for a reason. You want to satisfy, you want to please somebody else. It's not pleasing to you, you have to force yourself. So you're doing it to please somebody else. That's what it means to force yourself. If it was spontaneous, there would be no question of force. You would just be dancing in ecstasy and dancing and chanting in ecstasy. No force required. But when it's not spontaneous, force sometimes is required. Of course, there's different types of force. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains in his Madhurya Kandambani, he says that generally people take to Krishna consciousness either as a result of coming in contact in the previous life with devotional service, or as a result of the forceful preaching of another preacher. So he says this is how persons actually take and develop faith. Sometimes the faith is spontaneous as a result of previous devotional service, or sometimes as a result of the... But what does it mean, forceful preaching? Does it mean, take the arm and... Chant! Oh, chant! Oh, no! No!
No, I'm on fire!
No! Say Krishna!
Okay, I give up Krishna! Get you on the stage, man.
It's a tryout. No, it's not the kind of force. The force is in it, and they're preaching. Purity is the force. Right? Prabhupada says purity is the force. Their force is because they're doing what they're speaking about. Therefore, it has potency. And that's what Prabhupada talks about here. We're going to get to that. Prabhupada says, simply quoting verses like parrot, that will not do. There has to be jnan, vijnan. He says, there has to be practice. Purity as the force means is that when we say, we're doing what we say. Otherwise, it's Kali Yuga. That's the symptom of Kali Yuga. Right? There's people say, but don't do. So if one says and does, it's powerful. It's very powerful. If one says, surrender to Krishna, and if you surrender to Krishna, it's powerful. Very potent. But if he says surrender to Krishna just because he wants everybody else to surrender, but when he set time for him to surrender, then there's no words, there's no potency. It won't act in the heart. So in the same thing, when one actually says chant Hare Krishna, and if one is absorbed and likes chanting Hare Krishna, he's blissfully, this is his life, chanting Hare Krishna, it acts. Prabhupada says that's the nature of fire. It doesn't discriminate. If a child touches fire, it will act. He wasn't thinking, well, this is child, I won't burn. No, it will act. Same thing when the purity is there, it will act. Doesn't discriminate. Anyone who comes in contact, it will act. So, therefore, force means by the purity of the persons who are speaking. Because if they're practicing, like Goswami's Prabhupada said, why were the Goswamis so potent? Because they were so much attracted to chanting and hearing. And therefore, because they were attracted, they were thinking, I want to become attracted like that. I want to chant Hare Krishna enthusiastically. I want to taste. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the example in Bhakti Loka. He gives the example of the verse Vacho Vegam Manasa Krodha Vegam. He says a person first controls the senses and then he conquers the world. But what does it mean? He says he controls the senses first, because he's quoting that verse, one who has controlled the six pushing agents, he can make disciples all over the world. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives this commentary that one who controls these six pushing agents, he says by controlling his mind, his senses, and his tongue, his belly and genitals, then he can conquer the world. Why? Because people will see this person is happy. And how does he conquer? He doesn't conquer by raising a sword, or he doesn't conquer by brute strength. He conquers because he has a taste. And others say, I want that too. The taste I have in life is not so much of a taste. What's the taste about talking about George Bush every day? Talking about the Iraq War. I mean, there's no taste. I mean, that's like... it's chewing the chewed. Prahlad Maharaj, this is punak punas chavita chavananam. And it's like, he says, matirna krishne paratak svatova mato bipatyeta grihabhatanam adanta gobiya vishitam tamisham punak punas chavita chavananam. It says, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons who are very much addicted towards material life, they make progress towards hellish conditions of life, and they repeatedly chew that which hasn't been, repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations towards Krishna are never aroused, either by their own efforts, by the efforts of others, or by a combination of both. Because they're chewing the chewed. To talk about politics, to talk about the weather, to talk about political personalities. Every day people are just absorbed, you know, pick up the newspaper and it's the same thing. It's chewing the chewed. There's no taste. You take some gum and chew it. There's no taste. I remember, actually, I even remember his name. His name was Kevin Murphy. He used to sit next to me in class in sixth grade. And he used to take it. He used to save his gum underneath the desk. We used to watch him and all make fun of him. Nobody could understand, you know, why is this kid in school? He's taking the gum and put it under the desk. Nobody else would do it. He was chewing. There's no taste. But that's what it is. Punak punas chavita chavananam is chewing the chewed. There's no taste. But when we see that others, they have some taste for Krishna consciousness, then we think, phew. Especially when we get a little taste ourselves. Get a little taste by association, by hearing about such personalities. It gives us some taste. So Prabhupada says, even if you don't feel ecstasy, if you dance by force, that will also help us. Krishna kirtana dhananatala parope mambitambamiti. By dancing, we shall develop our dormant Krishna consciousness, love for Krishna. This is a nice process. Krishna kirtana gana natana paro premambitambo nidhi. Then you will merge into the ocean of love for Krishna. So this is the highest stage of ecstasy for Krishna consciousness. Always chanting Krishna's name, dancing in ecstasy, and to be merged in the ocean of love for Krishna. These are the perfection. Dira dira jana priyo. In this way, we shall become friendly to every people. Dira, dira. There are two classes of men. Dira, sober, and other class, rogue. So both of them will be pleased by Krishna kirtan. You have practical experience. When there is Krishna kirtan, people, all classes of people, become very much pleased and they join. Listen to what Prabhupada describes Krishna kirtan as. He says, you have practical experience. When there is Krishna kirtan, people, all classes of people become very much pleased and they join. As soon as your kirtan will be pure sankirtan, not artificial, not professional, There are many professional dancers that will not attract. But even if you do not know the art of dancing, if you simply dance in ecstasy for Krishna's love, that will be appreciated by everyone. That will, he says it twice, that will be appreciated by everyone. Krishna kirtana gananatana paro. This is the art. One does not require to become a Vedantist. Simply if one chants Krishna's name, holy name, and in ecstasy dances, he's more than a Vedantist. Actually, Vedanti means one who knows the ultimate knowledge, Veda. Veda means knowledge, and Anta means ultimate, Vedanta. Then what is that ultimate knowledge? Krishna. Vedaischa sayavara aham eva vedyam. That is ultimate knowledge. So one who has understood Krishna and Krishna's love, he's dancing. And what more Vedanta can do? I love this statement, Prabhupada said. He's boldly challenging. If you're chanting and dancing, and you're doing it for Krishna's pleasure, what more would a Vedanta do for you? What do you need Vedanta? That was Lord Chaitanya's argument to Prakashananda, said as what? He says, you are sannyasi, why don't you study Vedanta with us? He said, my spiritual master considered me a fool. He said, you simply chant his name every day. And I've taken this name on his order, and I've chanted, and I found that by so doing, that sometimes tears come to my eyes, I begin crying, I dance in ecstasy. Yeah, he's describing. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya is explaining to Prakashananda. He says that because my spiritual master considered me unqualified. Of course, Lord Chaitanya was fully qualified to speak in Vedanta. After he did that, he spoke on Vedanta and completely destroyed them all their misconceptions, Mayavadi misconceptions. But still, he established the principle. What more will Vedanta do if you are chanting and dancing for Krishna's love? That is the goal. That is perfection. One who chants and dance, and Prabhupada says here, that's what is attractive. That's what will attract others. If we actually want to be effective for attracting others to Krishna consciousness, then we have to be Krishna conscious ourselves. Otherwise, what are we attracting them to? I'm going to invite them to the temple. But inviting them to the temple, that's not the goal. We have to attract them to something. And when they see that there's wonderful, wonderful experience to be had in Krishna consciousness, because people who have Krishna consciousness, the nature of their Krishna consciousness is such, they don't want to keep it for themselves. They want to share it. That's the symptom of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says one of the symptoms of Krishna consciousness is that such persons always want to speak about Krishna. Who are they going to speak to? They're going to speak to somebody who's going to hear from them. And there, when somebody hears from them, then it will act. It will act. Prabhupada says it's like a person who has a disease. He's infected with a disease. If you come close to him, you'll get sick. You'll get his infection. This kind of infection we should want. We should become infected with the desire to chant and dance for Krishna's love. When we have a little, even a little glimpse of that desire, even though we can't, but if we have a little glimpse of that desire, that's all we need. Because anything else that comes in, that we come in contact with that has that, it will fan that spark, because that's what we want. Just a little, the smallest little spark can grow into a huge flame, right? If it's fanned. And what is the fanning process? The fanning process is to be in the association of devotees who like to chant and dance for Krishna's love. That is all. They like it. They like it not because it's sense gratification. Of course it is sense gratification. But spiritual sense gratification. We have senses. We're spirit souls. Spirit souls are not devoid of senses. And they're gratified in the highest way. Vishayani vinivartate narahasya dehina rasavajam rasopyasa param jishtvara nivartate. The embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, even though some taste still remains. But he ceases those engagements when he experiences a higher taste that becomes fixed in consciousness. It's a transcendental sense gratification. So this is, even if it's just a little spark, a tiny, tiny spark. And everybody's got the little spark. Why? Because Rupa Goswami says that
that Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, Sajjan Kabo Noi, Shravanadi Sutta Chita Kori Udoi, that pure love is there in the heart of everyone. It doesn't come from any other source. But if one hears about Krishna and the association of devotees, it will grow. It comes out. So if we don't have that love, if we don't have at least we should have the desire to be in the association of Krishna's devotees who like to chant and dance and please Krishna. That's all. And the prayers of great devotees who are given benedictions by the Lord. When the Lord asked the Prachetas, right? What benediction you want? Please give us association of your devotees. Of course, there was another benediction also that they were unified in their devotional service to Krishna. But there was several places where the Lord asked the devotees for benediction, and the devotees only prayed, please, I pray that birth after birth after birth, you simply let me take birth in the association of your devotees. Like Haridas Thakur, he was given a benediction by the Lord. He said, Lord, I don't want any benediction at all. He said, Lord said, no, you must ask for some benediction. Haridas Thakur, he prayed, he said, please just give me the benediction that the remnants of foodstuffs of your devotees will be my foodstuffs, birth after birth after birth. That is all I ask. Just let me be in your devotees, in association of your devotees. Because by the association of devotees, that's how we become Krishna conscious. If we have that desire, everything else will come from that. So being in the association of devotees is the way to get that desire. And then, when one gets just a little appreciation for the association of devotees, then one begins to think, I have to do whatever I can. I have to even pray for it. I have to pray. If I just pray for the association of devotees who will help me get out of this cesspool of the material consciousness that I'm in every day. If I just simply have a little desire just to be in the association of devotees and pray for it. And if I just chant Hare Krishna a little bit, and just for, even if it's for a few moments, even a moment, just intensely praying, Krishna, give me the association of your devotees, then that's what will carry us forward in our advancement in Krishna consciousness. That's all we need. Everything else comes by the blessing and by the mercy of the Lord's devotees. It is by their mercy we get Krishna consciousness. It's not by our own mercy. It's not by our own strength. Not by strength, not by austerities, not by executing vows. None of these things awaken the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. These things don't awaken. Krishna told Arjuna. He said, not by performing sacrifices, not by studying the Vedas, not by any of these things can you see me as I am. It's only by undivided devotional service can you see me as I am standing before you. Only then can you enter the mysteries of understanding. So it's not by our own strength that we can see Krishna. We can't say, Krishna, come here. He doesn't have to listen to us. But who does he want to listen? When his devotee says, Krishna, please come. Give him your mercy. Krishna will listen. That's the power. Krishna tells his devotee, you have the power. You have purchased me. And therefore you can sell me wherever you like. Krishna places himself under the control of his devotee. When his devotee says, Krishna, please be kind upon this soul, Krishna cannot refuse. Isn't that what Nityananda did to Lord Chaitanya? Please be kind upon these fallen drunkards, Jagai and Madhai. Please be merciful. You have Patita Pavana. You're the most merciful incarnation. You come to deliver the most fallen. Certainly these two are candidates for your mercy. Please. You are known as Patita Pavana. How will you be glorified? If you deliver these two, your glorification will be heard throughout the three worlds as Patita Pavana. So by the mercy of Nittai, Jagai and Madhai were delivered because he begged Lord Chaitanya to deliver them. And Lord Chaitanya could not refuse. Cannot refuse. Such is the power of a Vaishnava. The Lord cannot refuse. He's begging. When Advaita wanted the Lord to descend, he said, I will invoke Lord Chaitanya, the Lord, to personally come and descend to deliver all these fallen rascals. He said, and then he said a very bold statement. He says, and if the Lord does not come, I will sever everyone's head from their body. That's how convinced he was that the Lord would come.
He was also angry because of their sinful activities.
Huh?
He was also angry because of
their sinful activities, right? So it's by the power of the devotee that the Lord comes and delivers. So that our only hope is to get the association of devotees. And that's what Prabhupada is talking about here. He's talking about hearing, following the example, and just aspiring for the association of those who give us that spark of inspiration to chant Hare Krishna, to hear about Krishna, and to dance for Krishna. That's why we're talking about bhakti works, Swami. Dancing especially.
It's one third of the crisis.
Huh?
It's one third of the
crisis. That's right. Chanting, dancing, and feasting.
He's a good dancer.
Check
on him.
He's a good dancer.
Chanting, dancing, and feasting.
It's all here.
We should work together. By some deep providence, we're bumping into each other all the time. 3 weeks, anyway.
Anyways, I have to stop now. So, maybe you'd like to say something?
Mm-hmm. We have to go in order.
I'm sort of, this is my stomping ground somewhere. We're going to do a vote of thanks after. No one's had a chance to.
That's good.
It's not good.
We're never going to hear about feasting.
But I don't know what I can say. I was covered everything. But I'll say, try to say something. Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vishnaya Sri Rupi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaur Rani Pachari Dini Yatrasa Shushunya Vahi Prasthya Chari Satani Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu
Nityananda Shri Advaita Gaura Shivasini Gaura Vrinda
Hare Krishna
Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama
Hare Hare. The Maharaja, His Holiness Nanjana Maharaj, has enthusiastically described the process of devotional service in a nutshell, which is to associate with devotees and to engage in chanting and dancing. But what keeps us from doing that? What keeps us from doing that? Attachment to material life. We're still attached. We know that we should be doing these things, but still we can't give up our attachments. So we try to squeeze in Krishna consciousness every once in a while. But here, it's explained, Taktvatunam Shesha Mandala Patisanam Saratu Chiva. This verse from the Sattvaswami Astaka number 4.
You need translation?
The first line. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswami, namely Sri Rupas Goswami, Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who kicked off all association of aristocracy as insignificant, in order to deliver the four conditioned souls, they accepted loincloths, treating themselves as mendicants. They were always merged in the ecstatic ocean of the gopis' love for Krishna, and bathed always and repeatedly in the waves of that ocean. Srinivas Acharya, actually, who was the author of these beautiful, beautiful glorifications of the six Goswami, explains that they were, especially Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, they were highly placed government ministers, and they were getting a tremendous amount of salary. They had good positions, they had security in their positions, but the word tuchavat means they gave it up as insignificant. Just like straw on the street. Just like, to use a very gross example, when one uses the bathroom, immediately they leave. They don't stick around.
bathroom's not a place you stay. It's a place for doing your business and you leave. So the material, they saw everything material as insignificant, and therefore they engaged in renunciation and, of course, glorifying the Lord in the love of the gopis. So material life is, from the spiritual platform, you know, unnatural. But we live in the material world, we have a material body, we have material responsibilities, and that's important. But these things should be understood in relationship to the golden life. What is the golden life? As Maharaj was explaining, the golden life is to awaken our natural love for Krishna. That is the purpose of human life. Whatever else we're doing as far as our job, our responsibilities in this world, is meant to somehow maintain our body and whatever responsibilities we have in order to practice Krishna consciousness. These things have to be aligned in such a way that the practice of Krishna consciousness is kept first, because that's ultimately the goal of life. What is the use of simply becoming successful in the material world? Because ultimately, it's all gone. It says even if you take the devotional service and somehow or other you do not finish because of some reason, you fall down due to some immaturity, what is the loss? But what is the gain if one somehow or other becomes successful in material life? What is the gain? Everything ultimately is a loss and death. So part of understanding the importance of taking to Krishna consciousness is to understand that this material world and the value system that goes along with this material world is practically doesn't have any value for one who is engaged in devotional service. In other words, one who is serious on the path of devotional service. So we're still attached to this material world, and we're still attached to so many material things. But we have to see that this attachment ultimately is unnatural. We have to transfer that attachment to Krishna in devotional service. And Maharaj, so enthusiastic and with great determination and so many nice examples, gave us the process. Dive into the process of devotional service. Associate with devotees. Chant and glorify the holy names of the Lord. Dance. Take nice Krishna prasadam. Take opportunities as much as possible to come in together and put Krishna in the center. And gradually we start to lose our taste for this material world. Because the material world, ultimately, and the material, the so-called pleasures of the material world are not really pleasures at all. They're simply, what we say, reliefs from the sufferings of this material world. That's all. That's all this is. Somehow or other, satisfying the senses is simply to keep the pain of the pushings of the senses quiet for a few minutes. And then after a while, they come back again. One contemporary of Lord Chaitanya, actually, not contemporary, but predecessor, Vyapati, famous poet, Vidyapati?
Vidyapati.
He explains that material happiness is like a drop of water in a desert. If you're thirsty and you're in the desert and somebody hands you a drop, do you really feel happy? You really thank that person, thank you very much, this drop I'm going to really relish? Actually, you become even more upset.
You probably tell them, you drop.
Yeah. Well, that's the purport. You take a drop in the material life, you take a drop here, a drop there, a drop there, and then eventually you drop. It's all over. So the satisfaction we get from material life, even in this best situation, is like a drop of water in the desert. And it looks good. You see it from a distance, just like when you're in a desert, you see a mirage. And what is a mirage? It's the light of the sun reflecting on the sand and gives an image of water. And when the desire for thirst becomes so strong, one actually imagines, they see water. So they run to it. So in material life, people are dying for happiness, for satisfaction, for peace of mind, for fulfillment of their plans in life. But then they go. And what do they get? They reach for that drop of water, more hot burning sand. That's all it is. So the pleasures of this material world are insignificant compared to the happiness that one can achieve even from a drop of the mercy of the engagement in devotional service. Or as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, that I'm standing on the ocean of the shore of the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and I'm trying to taste just one drop. And that one drop is sufficient to drown the whole world in ecstatic love of God. Lord Chaitanya has broken open the spiritual world in its fullest, I mean, the fullest sense of he's giving actually the highest, the love of God in Krishna in Vrindavan in the form of this Sankirtan movement. There's no other history of anyone coming to present something that is as complete and as perfect as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But still, we're chasing after these drops in this material world. You chase after the thing, you're looking for it. You're looking for satisfaction, you're looking for happiness, for pleasure. You put your focus on something, and you get it, and it doesn't give you what you want. And you become unhappy, sad, dissatisfied. Sometimes you can become angry and suicidal, or even violent. And you try for something, you get it, and it doesn't give you what you want. You try for something, you don't get it, and it doesn't give you what you want, the happiness of it. And then there's a third one. You try for something, and you get it, and it gives you some pleasure for some time. And guess what? Then it ends. So you can't lose, you can't win. Material world, you can't win, you can't stop playing. You're forced. Material desires are pushing us to try to fulfill these pushings. But still, ultimately, we're always defeated. But when we come to Krishna consciousness, associate with devotees, chant the holy names of the Lord, dance. And Prabhupada said, even if you cannot dance, you can dance within your heart. Of course, if you watch Bhakti Mark Swami, you'll dance. Dancing is so important. It's a very important part of our process because chanting, the expression of dancing, is the ultimate principle of happiness. When you chant and dance, you're happy. The happiness comes in the form of dancing. And even if you don't feel like dancing, you dance, you become happy. Why? Because the soul's nature is to glorify the Lord in a joyful way. And chanting and dancing is the combined form of that expression. So when we actually dance and chant, we actually feel happy, even if we don't feel like doing it. This is the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness. Why? Because it's natural. To live in the material world and to struggle hard like an ass simply for a little sense gratification that's gone in a few moments is unnatural. It's unnatural. And everybody's doing it. Why? Because they think that this is happiness. So how do we overcome that? Just say no to Maya, say yes to Krishna. Maya comes along, time to fulfill your promise to me to engage in sense gratification. Sorry, Maya, I'm busy. Come back tomorrow. Tell Maya to come back tomorrow. No time for Maya.
Sorry, that's not
good. Yeah. That's actually the key to Krishna consciousness. We can't get rid of our material desires just by saying, stopping them. We have to replace them with other things that just keep push them out. When you bring in the sun, the darkness, the shadows go. When you bring in the light of Krishna consciousness, all ignorance, all illusion ultimately goes. So this is a wonderful process. And we're fortunate. We have come by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and his representatives to this process. How many souls are actually taken to this process? It's so easily available. Very few. So if you've been attracted, you're fortunate. Just to become attracted is a sense that you have some good fortune and your good fortune has been awakened. But now we have to actually dive deep into this process. Because when we get the taste, when that taste comes, then we say, yes, now I understand. We want that taste. The taste is sweet. Associate with devotees and hear and chant the glories of the Lord. This is where the taste actually comes. So in a practical sense, my humble suggestion is do this as much as you can. Come together, chant, dance, and take nice Krishna prasadam, and be happy in Krishna consciousness. go about your other affairs in this world, but just do them as a responsibility. But ultimately, our happiness is on the spiritual path. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank both Maharajas, Niranjan Swami.
Well, he's asking for questions. He still
has anybody has any questions? Still have
3 minutes yet. Have a question for Niranjan Swami? Any criticisms?
Everybody's very content. I think that's what it means.
How do you do meditation? What's the proper way of doing meditation?
Proper way of doing meditation?
Yeah.
What meditation means, to fix the mind on something, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes people think meditation means to remove thoughts from the mind, but that's not meditation. That's if we simply try to remove the thoughts, mind will always fill up again with more thoughts.
Mm.
If we try to think about not thinking, at best we can think about not thinking. So we have to replace with something. Meditation means to fix the mind on something which is transcendental, something that has not part of this world. So we try to fix our mind. Some people fix their mind on mantra, but ultimately Krishna says Pranava Sarvavedeshu, I am the syllable of the Vedic mantras. Ultimately, even if we want to fix our mind on some mantra, what we want to actually fix our mind on is Krishna, who is the source of everything. So the best form of meditation is chanting Krishna's name.
Mm.
And the reason why that's the best source of meditation, because Krishna, who is called Akila Rasa Mita Murti, Akila Rasa Mita Murti means he is an ocean of all kinds of transcendental relationships. Everyone has an eternal relationship with Krishna. The most satisfying relationship with Krishna is available to each and every one of us, who is a transcendental personality, who loves us, who is eternal, who has a beautiful complexion, beautiful form, and every living entity ultimately is an eternal servant of Krishna. And by pleasing Krishna, pleasing Him, we become pleased, we become satisfied. He reciprocates that love so fully. So if we want to meditate, ultimately we have to meditate on that which has nothing to do with this world, which is transcendental. And the most transcendental object beyond this world is Krishna Himself, who is the source of everything. So we chant His names because He's invested Himself in His name. He's so very kind. And if you want God, if you want the highest person, if you want the highest objective in life, He becomes so easily accessible by His name because He's so kindly placed Himself, made Himself available in His name.
Mm-hmm.
When we chant His name, we chant, if we're thirsty, we chant water, water, water. It does nothing. Because the name water and the substance water is completely different from one another. That's the duality of the material world. But Krishna is absolute. That means His name, His activities, His form, His qualities, they're all non-different from Him. That is the absolute nature of transcendence. So when we chant Krishna, 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 Krishna is there in His name. He makes Himself accessible by His name. Whereas water, water, water does nothing for us. But Krishna, Krishna, Krishna does. By His power, by His potency. So if we actually want to meditate, we fix our minds on Krishna. And the best way to fix the mind on Krishna is cultivating the desire to please Him. Because that's our nature. It's our inherent nature which cannot be given up. It's our dharma. When we hear this word dharma, it's a very common term. But what is dharma? Some people translate it as religion.
Mm.
But dharma means that which sustains one's existence. That which is one's inherent nature. The inherent nature, the dharma of sugar, sweetness. The dharma of water is liquidity. You can't take liquidity away from water and make it something else.
It's not water anymore. So the Dharma of the living being, the Dharma of the living spirit, is to love Krishna. That's our Dharma, to serve Krishna, to love Him. And when we actually do it with a mentality, with a desire, cultivating a desire to please Him, that's the highest meditation. There's nothing higher. Absolutely nothing.
No, different people say different ways. So your way is chanting and dancing is meditation.
Yeah. It depends what our objective is. What is our goal of meditation? Okay. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, those who worship the planets of the demigods, those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits, they go to the planets of the ghosts and spirits. Those who worship me, they come to me. So there's different goals according to the particular objective one has in his mind. What is the goal of meditation? What does one want fulfilled? Some people want to meditate because they want a good job. They want to become free from anxiety. But if one wants to love God, chanting is the best way. So it just depends on what is the goal one wants fulfilled by his meditation.
The goal is to have control of mind, to have control over thoughts.
That's a byproduct. You can chant Krishna's name and have control of your mind and the thoughts, but it's a byproduct. There's a much higher goal to be achieved than that. Doesn't everyone want happiness forever? Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, I'm going to make plans today to suffer. But it comes. You don't have to invite it, but it comes.
Yeah, but for happiness you have to have money. if your basic needs of your life are not met, you can't do any chanting or you can't do any anything else. Basic needs first must be met.
Krishna is the greatest wealth. If you have Krishna,
if you have the wealth, then that is the greatest wealth.
But Krishna is Bhagavan. He means he possesses all opulences in full. That means he's the most wealthy. So why go to these men and worship them for some paltry money? Why not worship Krishna if you want wealth? He already owns everything. You know anybody else you can work for who owns everything? I mean, you got Bill Gates and you got some other people, you know, they might work for them and give you something. But who owns everything? So Krishna's got the...
What I'm saying, basically, your basic needs are met, then you can think of Krishna consciousness.
But what is everyone?
But once if the basic needs are not met, if you don't have roof over your head, if you don't have anything to eat, then you cannot think of any consciousness at all.
So that
is the first thing to be met.
Oh, but if you worship Krishna, He'll provide all these things. If you have that faith, then it works. Even if you're lacking in one something, if you worship the Lord, He takes care of you. He said, I carry what you lack, I preserve what you have. If you have faith in the Lord will take care of you. He's going to provide. He's not going to let His devotees starve or suffer. That's a fact. Prabhupada used to say, the elephant, he eats 40 kgs every day of food. Where is he getting it? He's not working. So the Lord's providing for the animals. He's providing for, even for people who don't worship Him, He provides. But therefore, will He not provide for His devotee? It takes a little faith, but the Lord actually gives assurance, if you worship me, I take care of you. You will not starve.
And because one gets a higher pleasure from coming in contact with Krishna, he doesn't need very much to be satisfied. To satisfy his bodily needs.
Yeah, that is true, but first basic needs has to be met, then only after that.
But the theme here this evening has been to discuss the lives and the mood of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. We were, you know, singing a song about their character. And these were all successful persons, as Maharaj was saying. They had everything. They were well-salaried. They had the best of life. All the commodities you could imagine for that time. And they voluntarily decided that we don't need this stuff. We are happy just to lead the simple life, to downsize, to go for simplification of life, and they wore a loincloth, as it's described. And they ate very little. You know, the epitome was Raghunath Das Goswami took very little, and others slept very little, took a little buttermilk, and they were content. Yet, because they had Krishna to guide them in their lives, they had real wealth, because Krishna is the richest man. So money doesn't buy you love, as the saying goes. It certainly doesn't buy Krishna's love. So, granted, just to get started in life, we may need some amenities, we may need things to survive. But the bottom line is, after you've had some of those things, you feel it's not enough. And Krishna is enough. He's everything. So everything boils down to love of Krishna. That's the goal. Goal of meditation is to love him. And it can be had through the process of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmani, Vedanam. Nine processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing and chanting about the glories of Krishna. It's a verse from Prahlad Maharaj. And money will be there if you do these benevolent things.
Krishna is not going to let you start.
No, I don't mean money means just go after money. Mm-hmm. I mean just enough. So that at least you can survive, you have roof over your head and things like that. Afterwards you can do
But the main mantra is Krishna say, if you give me just enough to I need, then I'll do something for you. That's not love. If one actually wants to cultivate love, it's not that he sets a condition, he sets a contract with God. That's mercantile mentality. There's a difference between the cultivating love of God and becoming a merchant. Mercantile mentality means it's okay, I'll scratch, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. If you give me what I need, then I'll do something for you. But no, that's then I'm not. You can. No. But if we do something first, even if we don't have what we need, that Krishna sees that more than anything else. He's Bhavagrahi. Mm-hmm. Bhavagrahi Janardana. Bhavagrahi Janardana means that whatever you do, even if you chant mantras, and you can't even chant them properly, right? He sees the essence of a person's attitude. He sees that. He captures that. And he holds that most dear to him. So don't you think he won't reciprocate if he sees that he doesn't even have what he needs, but still he's doing this for me? He's a person. Don't you think that if you have a friend, right, and he knows that you're having great difficulties, and he's having great difficulty too, that if he sees that you've sacrificed your difficulty to do something for him, don't you think that will make him feel dear? Don't you think he'll feel like, I mean, you'll feel dear to him. You sacrifice. Krishna doesn't need anything. He doesn't need anything that we offer to him. He needs absolutely nothing. It's already his. But he's purchased because he sees this person is having so much difficulty. I want to give him something to reciprocate. He's a person. So what does he give? He gives everything that we need to come to him. Everything. Whatever that means. Maintaining this body, then we'll have what we need. But we have to do something for him without setting a condition first.
No, I was expecting your answer in a different way.
Maybe you're expecting me to answer in a different way, but I'm sorry, I have to answer
it. English books which I read from other writers, they say for meditating, you should sit in a room all alone, no lights and things like that, and then you chant maybe Om and something like that. And that's the way you meditate. So I was thinking of some
along those lines. There is some outline like that in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna talks about the solitary approach.
Yes.
But in Kali Yuga, the age in which we live, what is recommended is not to just be so centered on one's own salvation, but rather to think about moving ahead, moving on spiritually, and benefiting yourself by involving a whole, it's group effort, it's team effort. Yeah. Because we stand alone in this very dark, very offensive, sinful world, very helpless, there's a need for group effort, reinforcement from people around us. So Krishna has come in this day and age as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to introduce a unique method where, yes, you can, you know, block yourself out from the world, but you do that by having a wall of devotees, and they're singing and dancing, and that's the approach, that's the Yuga Dharma for the age.
I get it, that I, you know, get complete picture you have, we are doing.
Yeah.
But before I had heard of only, what about, Om?
Right.
And some people say you see a light or something.
Right.
Or
other, but these particular approaches...
Blue light and...
Right.
With that you meditate, so...
Well, somebody had said, then they chant and...
Do you practice something? Do you do some chant?
I try, but my mind doesn't concentrate, you know.
You can read it.
There and there, yeah.
You can read it. Just read the words and chant. Look at the mantra and chant that way. It's a good way to meditate.
Practice.
Okay.
But I would like to take a minute to recognize Mr. Sethi, right?
Yeah.
He's new amongst our group here, and he's an associate, work associate with Guru Prasad Prabhu, yeah. And formerly he worked with the Scindia Ocean Line.
Yeah.
From India, from Mumbai, based there.
Yeah, yeah.
And if any of you are familiar with that, there's a tie with Srila Prabhupada.
Oh, yeah.
Because one of the boats, I think, no longer in operation, probably a bit rusty, Titanic status, you know, down in the ocean, is the Jaladuta.
Yeah.
And it was that boat that Srila Prabhupada was, you know, became a passenger on to.
Okay.
Help him get over to the ocean and reach American soil,
mm-hmm.
in Boston, where Maharaj hails from.
What's the connection?
That the connection is that you worked with
Scindia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Scindia Ocean Line and liner operating system.
That was a Jaladuta.
You were on the Jaladuta,
yeah,
right?
I've been there.
You've been there.
Yeah.
Maybe you walked. That's very significant to us. That. If we can get a hold of that boat, we will memorialize it and put it in our own museum.
Now that boat is finished, and new boat has come and named same Jaladuta name, but new boat is there.
And reincarnated.
Now
Jaladuta.
Well, nothing will be the same. The original is always the greatest. But if anybody has the opportunity to go on that boat and chant a little bit and honor Srila Prabhupada, maybe the spirit can be kept maintained. That would be very nice. Anyways, we feel honored that you're with us today.
Thank you very much.
And that you asked some very good, genuine questions.
Anything, but I just wanted to know your method, because I previously read few books on this, and the other things which I have shown, I read regarding this.
See,
but that you chant that om,
right.
And also you do some light. You see the light somewhere,
right?
The candle.
See, we're a little more keen to see light that emanates from Krishna, but that we're more interested in the source. The light that people speak about is Krishna's aura. You know, it's the Brahmajyoti. It's the energy coming from, emanating from his form. We're interested in the personality behind.
No, but this also works when you are chanting with the people and really concentrating on that. This also works.
Well, for sure. That's why we encourage everybody to chant together. Mm-hmm. And
did you like the chanting tonight?
Yeah, it's okay. It works. I know I've been to sessions like this before.
It's nice.
It really works. And you have to, again, keep your mind focused.
Practice.
Yeah.
The other day I was walking on Bloor Street in Toronto, and one of the older churches, they had a big banner across, and just to paraphrase, it was a quote from Psalms, and it was saying, "Let us glorify the Lord with tambourine, strings, flute, and dance." Let's, you know. So it's kind of capsulized everything, captured everything that's necessary for making spiritual progress. I just want to say that there are two ways of making progress. One is the solitary approach, but one which seems to have greater effect is when you're moving along and it's making spiritual advancement in the company of others. You know, it's kind of like wholesale liberation. You know, a lot of people get salvation all at the same time instead of... One approach is a little bit maybe necessary in the beginning, but you don't want to hold that. I don't want to go back home on my own. I want company, you know, when the saints come marching in. We all go together. So it's a combined effort. It's true holism.
Yes. You should just continue.
Want to
continue? Well, you know, it
depends on what you want to do. Okay. What would you like to do now?
Get chant.
Okay. All right. Okay. It's 8:20 almost, and people have to go to work tomorrow, so.
About 20 minutes.
Okay.
I'm going to.